Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Daniel Marsh. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Daniel William Marsh was born on May 14, 1997, and lived in Davis, California. This is 15 miles west of Sacramento. He was raised by his father Bill and his mother Sherry. On July 4, 2007, Daniel's mother left his father. She was having an affair with Daniel's former kindergarten teacher, who was also a woman. After this, Daniel started fantasizing about killing his mother's lover, wanting to strangle her. Later, this expanded into a desire to become a serial killer. Daniel wanted to torture and murder people. In 2008, when his parents divorced, Daniel went back and forth between their homes. He was diagnosed with adjustment disorder with depressed mood. In 2009, Daniel saved his father's life during a heart attack by performing CPR and won an award from the Red Cross. People were positive that Daniel was going to grow up to achieve great things. In May 2010, Daniel received mental health counseling. The psychotherapist said that Daniel was nervous, did not like other people, had anger problems, and was experiencing nightmares. When Daniel was 14 years old, his father kicked him out of his home because Daniel repeatedly came home intoxicated on alcohol and marijuana. After this, Daniel lived with his mother all the time. She was not aware that he was using substances. In November 2011, Daniel was treated for an eating disorder. His weight was only 93 pounds. The violent fantasies that Daniel had intensified, and he started killing cats. After one incident where he strangled a cat, a friend asked him why. Daniel replied, "Well, I just wanted to do it. I hated that cat." In December 2012, the police paid a visit to Daniel's school after he informed a school counselor about his homicidal fantasies. He was involuntarily hospitalized for a short time. In January 2013, Daniel told a school counselor that he was thinking about killing his classmates. When asked if he would act on his thoughts, he said, quote, "I have full confidence that I could hurt these people," unquote. This response led to another visit from the police. However, this time, they determined that Daniel was not a danger to anyone. Not long after this, Daniel graphically described to a school counselor how he wanted to torture and mutilate people. He said the dark fantasies he described only scratched the surface of his thoughts, and he had stopped resisting them. The school counselor did not report this disturbing revelation because Daniel did not express intent to follow through, and he never identified any victims. Over the next few months, Daniel continued to experience homicidal ideation. He would frequently think about murdering people. His interest in becoming a serial killer persisted and included learning about Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, and other notorious serial killers. One of Daniel's fantasies involved killing his classmates in the schoolyard. In art class, Daniel created violent drawings which contained a high level of graphic detail and depicted torture. And he spoke to his friends about torturing and killing random people. There was no significant fear of consequences. Daniel told his friends that if he was arrested for murder, he could invoke the insanity defense and escape responsibility. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On April 14, 2013, relatives of an 87-year-old lawyer named Oliver Northrup and his 76-year-old wife, Claudia Maupin, became concerned for the couple's well-being after Oliver missed a singing performance. The relatives visited the couple's condominium in Davis, California, and noticed that a window screen had been cut. The police were notified. When they searched the condominium, they found Oliver and Claudia dead in the master bedroom. Oliver had been stabbed 61 times, and his wife had been stabbed 67 times. Their bodies had been mutilated post-mortem. Investigators determined that the murders took place during the early morning hours of April 14. No evidence pointing to the perpetrator was found at the scene of the double murder. No video surveillance, no DNA, no fingerprints, no footprints, nothing at all. The couple did not have any enemies, and nothing was missing from their home. There was concern that the crime would transform into a cold case. Investigators did not know where to look next. This concern was alleviated after the police received a tip. One of Daniel's friends said that Daniel had confessed to him. On June 17, 2013, Daniel Marsh was questioned by the police. After over 3 hours of being interviewed, he finally confessed to murdering Oliver and Claudia. Here's what he said. On the night of April 14, 2013, Daniel had enough of resisting his homicidal thoughts and decided he would transform his fantasies into a reality. To avoid being caught for the crime he was about to commit, he made preparations. For example, he put tape on the bottom of his shoes so any footprints he left could not be matched to them. He put on gloves to avoid leaving fingerprints and DNA, and he dressed in all black clothing and wore a black face mask. This made him harder to detect at night. When Daniel left his house in search of victims, he was carrying a 6-inch knife. He roamed throughout the streets of Davis looking for a residence that had an open door or an open window. After checking 40 or 50 homes, he stumbled upon an open window in the condominium where Oliver and Claudia lived. Daniel cut the window screen and entered. He stood in the living room until the sound of snoring directed him to the master bedroom. There he found the couple asleep. Daniel watched them for about 10 minutes, thinking about how he would commit the murders. He was trembling, nervous, excited, and exhilarated. He said, quote, "I was actually going to do it. I was there. It was finally happening," unquote. As he was watching, Claudia woke up, saw him, and started screaming. Daniel stabbed her in the torso as she screamed for help and begged him to stop. Her screams only motivated him to intensify his attack. When Oliver woke up, Daniel stabbed him repeatedly as well. Even after both victims were dead, he continued stabbing them, saying, "It just felt right." Daniel then extensively mutilated the bodies, which included removing their internal organs. He placed a glass into Oliver's abdominal cavity and a cell phone into Claudia's. Daniel said he did this to blank with the investigators. Committing the Dummel murder gave Daniel a feeling of pure happiness that lasted for weeks. He said, "I'm not going to lie, it felt amazing." He indicated it was better than sex and said it was the most exhilarating, enjoyable feeling I've ever felt. As satisfying as it was, the positive feeling after the double murder was not permanent. Daniel needed to kill again in order to recapture the feeling. He wandered the streets of Davis carrying a baseball bat looking for additional victims, but he never found any. The baseball bat was selected to prevent the police from connecting the stabbing murder to the new murder he wanted to commit. Daniel directed the police to his mother's garage, where they found the knife he used to kill his victims, as well as the bloody clothing he wore during the homicidal attack. He was placed under arrest and charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. At his trial, which started on September 2, 2014, Daniel's defense team claimed he was not guilty by reason of insanity. They argued that his mental health issues prevented him from understanding the difference between right and wrong. On September 26, 2014, Daniel Marsh was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder. 4 days later, the jury found that Daniel was not insane when he killed his victims. Daniel Marsh was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 52 years. Despite this sentence, under California law, he will be eligible for parole after serving 25 years. This is due to his age when he committed the crime. He could be out of prison at the age of 42, which would give him plenty of time to resume his homicidal career. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number 1. Mental health professionals who assessed Daniel had different opinions about his condition. One clinician believed that Daniel was a psychopath, noting that he scored 35.8 out of 40 on the psychopathy checklist. This checklist contains symptoms of primary and secondary psychopathy. A score of 30 is considered the cutoff to be labeled as psychopathic. Another clinician looked at this case quite differently, claiming there was no evidence that Daniel had antisocial behavior. This clinician believed that Daniel had bipolar disorder. When looking at the available evidence, it is reasonable to believe that Daniel possessed pronounced psychopathic traits. He was self-centered, cold, callous, impulsive, irresponsible, reckless, manipulative, excitement-seeking, grandiose, remorseless, and had shallow affect. The vast majority of people who are psychopathic never go on to be a serial killer. However, there is reason to believe that Daniel was well on his way toward that goal. For example, Daniel had frequent and vivid fantasies about murdering multiple people. He enjoyed torturing and killing animals. He liked to set fires, One fire even involved a response by the fire department. And when he was 14 years old, he attended the Davis Police Academy for youth. Many serial killers maintain dreams of being in law enforcement. Item number two, like many thrill or hedonistic killers, Daniel described experiencing an intense euphoria after the killing. This feeling of joy had a surprising result. After the murders, Daniel was named Student of the Month at his high school. The officials believed that Daniel's behavior had improved dramatically. I'm going to operate under the assumption that these school officials did not know about the murder part. If they did, they may want to revisit the award criteria. The temporary component of the post-homicidal joy became evident quickly. During the month after the murder, May 2013, Daniel was expelled for carrying a knife on campus. Daniel would have needed a steady supply of murders in order to keep his mood up, which again supports this idea that he was well on his way to becoming a serial killer. Item number three, in May 2018, just over 5 years after the double murder, Daniel Marsh gave a TED Talk through some type of bizarre program at the prison. Here is a summary. Daniel had a troubled childhood, which involved mistreatment and loneliness. He claimed that he had been the victim of assaults of a sexual nature perpetrated by two offenders, who he does not name. He only said that he loved and trusted them. It's worth noting that Daniel has never identified these two mysterious and possibly non-existent people. Daniel became trapped in a downward spiral. His hurt turned to anger, and he felt an uncontrollable rage that grew stronger with each passing day. Daniel hated the people who harmed him and eventually hated all of humanity. Only after his incarceration did he realize that he needed a human connection. Daniel indicated he was resilient, loyal, kind-hearted, friendly, intelligent, and resourceful. He came to understand that there were no evil people in this world, only damaged people. At the end of his talk, Daniel received a round of vigorous applause, although the audience members were not told why Daniel was in prison. The objective of this prison program that facilitated the TED Talk was not clear. If their mission was to expose how manipulative Daniel was, then they succeeded. Item number four, there are mental health clinicians out there who have suggested that Daniel should be released from prison, including at least one who assessed him. Daniel actually threatened to murder this clinician during their first interview, so the first impression was less than ideal. For the most part, there are primarily two factors behind this idea that Daniel should get a second chance. He suffered from mental illness, and he was too young to be thrown away by society. People who support Daniel argue that he has changed a lot since his incarceration, and he would never kill again. This is an interesting theory, but it is important to remember how psychopathy expresses through the lifetime. If Daniel really is psychopathic, then he will learn to manipulate more effectively as he grows older. It is possible that he is remorseful, or maybe he just adapted to his circumstances. Daniel knows what society wants to hear, and he is willing to say it to gain his freedom. Another possibility here is that Daniel is truly remorseful, but he would still kill again if he had the chance. A person can be remorseful and motivated to commit murder at the same time, especially if they are a thrill or hedonistic killer. People like this feel a constant pressure to commit homicide. It overrides other feelings that might restrain them, including remorse. Before the state of California decides that Daniel is safe to release from prison, they may want to consider some of his more worrisome characteristics. For example, Daniel had absolutely no empathy. He would remain emotionless when his mother cried in pain and said, quote, "I don't feel sympathy for people at all. Don't feel empathy for them," unquote. He also said that every time he looked at someone, he had flashes of images of killing them. Some killers are too dangerous to ever be released. Daniel is almost certainly one of these killers. The destructive personality traits he possesses may change a little over time, but not enough to guarantee that society is safe. Those are my thoughts in the case of Daniel Marsh. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.